Yesterday I was trying to catch up on some of my work editing the meditations for the Anuam Way. And it happened that in the week that I'm working on, which is the 25th week, I think, of Ordinary Time, I came across the feast of St. Matthew, the Apostle. And in the Gospel, which happens to be the same Gospel I just read, Matthew chapter 9, the call of Matthew the tax collector, the one who prepared the meditation wrote, "Follow me." Two words which entirely changed the course of Matthew's life. I remember it because when I read it, I said, that's quite a striking way to put it. Follow me. Two words that entirely changed the course of Matthew's life. Now, in that meditation, it goes on to talk about the scandal of choosing a tax collector and how daring a thing that was for Jesus. And we could reflect on that. And perhaps when we get to the Feast of St. Matthew, we will reflect on what it means that Jesus chose a tax collector. For today, I'd like to stick with this expression, follow me, and then also connect it to an image that we get from today's first reading, the image Amos uses of the famine for hearing the word. You can imagine they're connected because calling an evangelist is to address the famine. So, and the idea of reflecting on this expression, follow me, I think came to mind because this has been part of the theme of this whole week. Remember, in Sunday's Gospel, Jesus said, follow me. And the one he spoke to said, well, let me go and bury my father first. And then we have the same thing in Monday's Gospel. Jesus says, follow me. And the man says, well, let me go and bury my father first. So we reflected earlier this week on the problem of saying to the Lord, yes, but first, this or that. Now, Matthew doesn't do that, to his credit. He doesn't say, I'll follow you, but first let me make a little more money, or first let me tie up a few loose ends, or first let me do my will, and then I'll do God's will. None of that in Matthew's case. He gets up and he follows him. But I think it's good to pause a little bit on this way of Jesus. It sounds so familiar to us because it comes up in the Gospels. Jesus calls people to follow him. But if you think about it, it's quite an extraordinary thing to say to someone. In fact, it's unique. Religious leaders, founders, typically say, come and follow this way. Come and learn my school of spirituality. Come and join this movement, something like that. And that makes sense to us. Come and share in what I have received. Here is a program. Here's a retreat. Here's a book. Something like that. That's, and the rabbis, when they taught, they said, this is what so-and-so says. This is what the scripture says. This is what the prophet so-and-so says. And every religious leader and teacher says something like that. I'm doing it all the time. Pope Francis said this. The Gospel of Matthew says this. But who can stand up and say, follow me? It puts the speaker in the middle instead of putting the speaker at the service of the religion or the way. And this is the extraordinary thing about Jesus. He doesn't say, here's a program or a book or a moral code. He says, follow me. Remember when, was it Thomas? Yeah, Thomas says, well, we don't know where you're going. You can't just show us the way. Show us the program. Give us the map. And Jesus says, I am the way. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I'm not giving you a program. I myself am the program. So the more you think of this, the more you realize how extraordinary it is that God himself reveals himself in Christ and says, follow me. It's a personal discipleship program. It's not anything else. Follow me. The impact of that call, follow me, since it's unique and since it comes from God himself, should have an extraordinary effect on anyone who hears that word. But we know that it doesn't always have that effect, as we learned on Sunday. Jesus said, follow me. And the man said, sure, but let me do this first. I'll follow you later. In the case of Matthew, he immediately responded. He got up, left his tax collecting job, and followed him. And then he hosted Jesus in a great banquet and invited many tax collectors and sinners. This gives us perhaps an insight into why Jesus called this man. Jesus already had some fishermen with their own peculiar gifts and weaknesses, but here Jesus called an educated man, a man who, at least knew how to work with numbers, and as we know, because Matthew later becomes an evangelist, he could write. He could become a servant of the word. That's unique to Matthew. But you can see Jesus saying, follow me, I have a plan for your life. I have something that your following me will produce for the good of others. So many people have pointed out that whenever someone is called, they are also given a task. Vocation is always associated with mission. Well, we know the mission of Matthew is to be an evangelist, an apostle, an evangelist. And this brings me to the second part of what I'd like to reflect on today. The terrible announcement of the prophet Amos that God is going to send a famine on the land. Not a famine of bread, not a scarcity of food, but a famine for hearing the word of the Lord. Now, Amos has lots of harsh things to say, as you probably have noticed this week. He's quite a difficult prophet to read because he's constantly pointing out our wrongdoing and the consequences of wrongdoing. And we don't like hearing things like that. It's quite disturbing. When Jesus says, follow me, at least sounds positive. Amos's style is to say, look what's going to happen to you if you don't follow. And yesterday's was one of the worst. I didn't talk about it because we had a special event yesterday, but remember what Amos said to the priest Amaziah, you're going to die in an unclean land, your children are going to be killed, and your wife is going to be a harlot. What kind of a reaction did he expect? Walk up to anybody and say, your wife is going to be a harlot. You got punched in the face. So Amos is a very strident proclaimer of the word. And most of his book is announcement either of, look at all the bad things you're doing, or look at all the bad consequences that will be the result of what you're doing. And today's reading is another example of that. Tomorrow we'll get to the positive side of Amos. At the end of the book, He turns the page and says, well, now God will favor you after all that he's suffering. Anyway, Amos has lots of negative things to say. You know, darkness and broad daylight, you're going to all be bald and wearing sackcloth. But one of the worst things is the famine for the word. They shall wander from sea to sea and rove from the north to the east in search of the word of the Lord, but they shall not find it. We understand what scarcity of food is like. And we're hearing more and more about this in our times as the supply chain breaks down and as the war in Ukraine disrupts the supply of grain, of wheat especially, from Russia and Ukraine. We know that there are places in East Africa that are already severely affected by that, and we know that there are a lot of shortages. There are places that are already in a grip of severe famine because of local droughts and because of international shipping breakdowns. We also know the problem of increased prices, and so even if there's a supply, we can't afford to buy what's available. But those things are physical, material realities. Here, Amos, or God speaking through Amos, is talking about a spiritual famine, which is actually worse, because we might be able to eat something else, but there's no substitute for spiritual food. If we don't have spiritual food, we starve spiritually. And the effect of the evil doing in Amos's time is to leave the people spiritually starving. How does this, it's hard to imagine this in our times, because we live in the information age. Back in the days when words were transmitted by handwritten scrolls and by word of mouth, if you want to stop the spread of the word, just burn a couple of scrolls and arrest a couple of preachers, and you cut the supply chain. There aren't very many scrolls, so if you burn up a few of them, there's a shortage. There aren't that many people who are proclaiming the word, so if you arrest them or kill them or drive them into exile, that does it, or you would think. But in our times, there's such a superabundance of information, it's hard to imagine that there could be a famine of the word. I've got a Bible right on my phone. Maybe you do too. On my computer, I have about 15 Bibles in different languages. It's not a famine, it's a superabundance of the written word. And then if you want to go on to a internet, you can find an endless supply of preachers and inspired writings and examples of the saints, and you could spend the rest of your life just searching websites that are banquets of the word. But that is not what's happening. What's happening here? It seems that aside from the supply side of the equation is not the problem, it's the demand side. People don't fill themselves with the word, they fill themselves with gossip or with stories of celebrities or I don't know what, politics or fear of COVID or I don't know what, sports. For all the great stuff that's available, people are feasting on junk food and poison. And so that's why they're spiritually starving. Now, this is a challenge for us in the church. How could we establish the supply chain from the abundant supply to the starving people? Well, clearly it's not enough to have the technological means, because that by itself doesn't work. There has to be personal connection. There has to be witness. There has to be love. There has to be accompaniment. There has to be a community of people who accept this feast and want to share it. That's why the example of Matthew is a good one. Sure, he wrote a gospel, but how did that gospel get into people's hands? Somebody must have said, hey, look what Matthew wrote. Listen to what Matthew wrote. Matthew himself did a lot more than just write a gospel. He preached the word. He shared his story of being called. I was a tax collector, Jesus called me, follow me. I was a sinner, Jesus had mercy on me. So part of what we need in this age of famine is not just more information, not just more digital files of scriptures. We need people who live by the word. We need evangelists to bring the food to the starving people, because the starving people themselves don't even know what they're missing. You would think that in the huge pile of information that is before us, the truth would stand out, the truth would shine, and everybody would be able to identify it. But it doesn't happen all the time. People are deceived or confused, or maybe willfully they are closing their eyes to the truth. And you know, this is the age not only of information, but of disinformation, of fake news. So how can we address that? Some people, some believers, some disciples of Jesus Christ have to stand up and testify to the truth, to be servants of the word, to bring the food to the starving people. Now, how we do it, each one of us has a different and unique call. But the scriptures today are telling us about the call of Matthew and about the problem of the famine. And that's, I think, that applies to us today. We are called. We are given a gift. And now it's our job to share the gift with others, to be evangelists and to take pity on the people who are spiritually starving.